So today, we are on a vision for you. We've had two Saturday sessions on the visit, a vision for you. And I really thought I got so much more out of it this time through than I have before. And of course, those podcasts are available on the site. And last week, we didn't cover the vision for you because we had very special birthdays. And we had three or four people who were really special. We're all special, celebrated time of recovery, and they've been coming to this meeting for years. And we shared how happy we were for them and how they've helped us. And so we didn't actually go through a vision for you last week. We've got on the vision for you chapter. Is so powerful. It's not studied at a lot of meetings. It's not read much. Some of it's quoted, page 164, which we're going to look at some point. But the way it's set up is a vision for you. And what they do in the first two or three pages, which we covered at the meeting 3 weeks ago, they look at what it was like without AA, without the fellowship, being an alcoholic and being at the end. And then they contrast that with what it's like in the fellowship and how your life has changed. And then they on page 153, it says, our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it. Look at the word, seize upon it, follow its suggestion. Why would you seize upon this? Because your hopeless condition of mind and body. This book was written for people who really wanted to find a way out. They weren't just thinking about it, they really wanted it. And follow its suggestions. And then at the bottom of the page, they say, perhaps the best way of treating me to a glimpse, they're going to give me a glimpse of my future, will be to describe the growth of the fellowship among us. And then on page, bottom of page 153, it talks about Bill W. And I did a meeting on just these next two pages, but I want to review it again. Because Eric's here, he likes it when I review, right, buddy? And for those on the podcast, they're always giving me crap because I like to review, but it helps put things in perspective. It's Bill W. He's in a Western city. He's in Akron. He's been sober 6 months. This is 1935. He recovered in the town's hospital and worked the steps. He left the town's hospital. He worked with alcoholics, Skid Row type people, people in institutions. In 1935, remember 1935, our economy was really bad. Things were really bad in the United States. We had shanty towns. Central Park, what you see pictures of in New York, was one big shanty town. People lived there in like little shanties. There was no place to live. There was no work. And so people, alcoholics, were doing poorly like the rest of the country. And there were a lot of people who were at the end of the line. And he recovered in the hospital, and he worked with these people, but nobody got sober. And he said to his wife, he said, nobody, I've never, you know, had people die in their house. He did everything. And she said to him a powerful statement. She says, but you're sober, Bill. You're sober. And so he remembered that. We're going to see, because this is where God makes his move. This is really the God makes his move section of the book. God didn't want me or you to die. And he didn't want alcoholics to die anymore. And he also, I believe, wanted to give his spiritual message to the world in a way that would be simple and people could understand it. And he knew the only people desperate enough to do the spiritual principles initially were alcoholics. Because we're dying without him and without a relationship with him. So he goes to the convention. He goes to Akron, and on page 154, he wanted to be set on his feet financially, so he's an alcoholic. Now, the next three paragraphs show the power of alcohol on your mind. the power of alcohol to tell you it's okay to drink and how it works in your mind. It's very well written, and I've seen that. I saw it for the first time when I was looking at it this morning. So he wanted to get set financially, and this seems vitally important. Remember, vital means necessary for life. So what was his higher power at this point? He wasn't working, seeking a relationship with God. He went to that meeting trying to get money and get back on his feet. Why? Because he's an alcoholic, and all alcoholics want approval. We all want to be loved, and we think approval is based on how we look to the outside world. So we're dependent on them to be happy, and if we're successful, and if we have money and prestige, then we think we're okay. Of course, it's never enough. But it's our whole goal. We're never okay getting things out there. We're only okay when we're with God. And so it didn't work out. He says, bitterly discouraged. Anybody ever been bitterly discouraged? So look at his thinking. He's bitterly discouraged. He's not just discouraged, he's bitterly discouraged. Why is he bitter? Because he didn't get what he wanted. He's getting, I'm sure, a little mad at God. Why didn't I get this deal? He found himself, he's discredited and almost broke. He's still physically weak and sober, but a few months he had his predicament was dangerous. He's in a predicament, which is a problem. He's in a bad situation. And why is it dangerous? Because he doesn't have a relationship with God right at this moment in his mind. He's disappointed about what he didn't get. He's bitterly discouraged. Why didn't things work out? Little self-pity, you think? Anybody recognize that? It's our favorite theme song. It follows, I did it my way. And the first verse should be, it gave me self-pity and killed me. So his predicament's dangerous. He wanted to talk to someone, but whom? See, he knew that he needed to reach out away from his thinking. He knew enough from that. His thinking is dangerous now. It's alcoholic thinking. And he wants to turn away from it, because if he keeps thinking with his alcoholic mind, he's going to drink, right? And it says, one dismal afternoon, so this was, I believe, a Saturday morning, he paced the hotel lobby. He didn't have any money to pay his bill. Sounds bad, doesn't it? So he's standing there in the lobby, and at one end is a directory of churches. At the other end is a bar. Now think of this. Now we read beautifully tonight, Ronald read it beautifully, on how we are at the turning point. If we read that every meeting, we stood at the turning point. We asked God to do what? Page 63. Anybody got it memorized? It says, I stood at the turning point. Bill W. is right at the turning point now. All of us are at the turning point right now with Bill. Think about it. And what's he going to do? Is he going to ask his protection care with complete abandon, or is he going to turn away from God? So he's there, and he sees the bar, and he says he's going to find companionship and release. Now, who's telling him that? His alcoholic mind. Remember we say we're powerless over alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's in a bottle, right? How can a liquid in a bottle be cunning and baffling? Because it's how our mind sees the world, and the alcohol is a solution for our spiritual disease, right? And then he thinks if he can find companionship and release, not from the bar, but he's really thinking about a drink, right? But he can't, he's going to go to the bar to find companionship and release, but we know what he's really thinking. You see, he's starting to relapse or take the first drink in his mind. And he says, unless he took drinks, so he's even telling himself he doesn't have the courage. He's not going to have the courage to make it through a lonely weekend. Oh, my. He says, of course, he couldn't drink, so he's arguing with himself, but he could sit hopefully at the table. Now, what is he going to hope for at the table? See? Think about it. How our mind tricks us. Anybody relate to this? Yeah. I can see it. It's so powerful. The one thing about this book is that I don't know if they intended it to write this way, but they had the hand of God guiding them. And the way it's written, it's so spiritual. But he could have a bottle of ginger ale. That's that, right? And after all, he had not been sober for 6 months now. Now, I said this at the last time. Somebody thought I said that you can't sober up after 6 months. I didn't say that. But he said, I've been sober for 6 months. So what he's telling himself is he could probably handle a drink. I've been sober 6 months. I can drink. I know how to sober up. Is that an alcoholic thought? Why is it an insane thought? Because we're powerless after we take the first drink. Why? Because we have no control of how much we drink. And we're powerless before we take the first drink, and we're powerless after. So, and he said, perhaps three. You see how his mind's working? No more, right? Is that a delusion? But you see, alcohol is talking to him through that bottle. Oh, you can drink three drinks of me and you'll be okay. You've been sober and you're bitterly discouraged and you're lonely and the deal didn't go through and look how hard you've worked and you've tried to help so many people. Anybody relate to that? Now, when we go to the liquor store, we don't say all that, right? But it's what goes on, because remember, our mind is where the disease is. So here, he's battling, think about it, he's battling with his alcohol thinking. It says what? Fear gripped him. He's fearful because he knows he's in a very dangerous place, and then he says he was on thin ice. Now here's where the spiritual experience comes in. We talk about it all the time. He had enough of a relationship with God that he could see it. He could actually talk to his alcoholic mind, and he could see how it was working. He's talking to it. Now, a lot of us can't do that. We just get in it, and we're gone. But he had enough of a relationship with God, and it says, the old insidious insanity. Now, his thinking now is insane, isn't it? And it's insidious. It just came up, and then it's the first drink. Now, here's where God, I believe, made his move and gave us this message to the world that's the 12 steps. And he says, with a shiver. Notice he's shivering. He shivered because it was so scary, but he could now turn away. He turned away from his mind telling him to drink. He was able to see the truth of it. And that's what the big book hammers home, that without God, I can never see the truth. I had no defense against the first drink, but Bill W. did. He'd worked the steps. He'd worked with other alcoholics. He'd really tried his best. And he's at the end of the line now, ready to take a drink. And he turned away from it and walked down the lobby, and we're here today. Now, I don't know about you, but every time I read this, every time I think about it, it's a powerful thing. It reminds me, there's numerous places in Scripture where people, God had them turn away into a different direction. Joe and Charlie like to talk about Saul became Paul, and God struck him while he was riding a donkey. They say he struck his ass while riding an ass. They're pretty funny. But they made the point that he changed. Something happened to him. Bill W. changes now. Music and gay chatter still flowed to him from the bar, but it didn't have power over him now. Alcohol had no power over him when he turned away. And who did he turn away to God? He turned away from his self-centeredness. He stood at the turning point. And here's how I know that, because what's his next line? He talks about his responsibilities. He's already getting out of self, right? How if he went and had a drink, how can he help all these other people? And they didn't know how to get well, and he had a solution. Other alcoholics. So then he thought that it worked for him. He stayed sober and he worked with other people. So he's going to try to find an alcoholic to talk to. It says his sanity returned. And notice the next words. He thanked God. Anybody here today sober? Yes. We should be so grateful for being able to be here sober today. And yet, why do we worry about things that are going on in our lives, and we have fear, and we're in our heads? We should just be so grateful that we're here today sober. And then we should appreciate our relationship with our Creator. And then when you're filled with gratitude, you can't be in self-pity. So he went to the church directory. He lifted the receiver. Now, I'm not going to go into 25 minutes on what happened in Akron and how all the people got together so that when he made this call, God had put them all together. There's a podcast on AA, The Hand of God. And when we read the foreword to the second edition, we're going to go through that as well. It talks about the flame that sparked in Akron in 1935, and it's in the foreword to the second edition. We'll go through that. So he lifted the receiver and he found Reverend Thunk. What a name. Reverend Thunk got us here today. And he knew a lady, Henrietta Seiberling, and they were in the Oxford group. And Henry Seiberling had been going to the Oxford group, which was, remember, a group of people practicing spiritual principles, trying to get closer to God. And they had been praying for Dr. Bob Smith that he would find some help for his alcoholism. They couldn't fix him. And she had been praying that someone would come and help Dr. Bob. And then Reverend Thunk gives him Henrietta Seiberling's name, and she tells Bill, I know someone. I know the perfect guy you can help. Because he told her that he needed to talk to another alcoholic. He had a message to carry. I can't remember the exact words, but it's in Dr. Bob and the Old Timers and AA Comes of Age, and I'll think of them later. And then she said, she called Dr. Bob. Now, I've told this before, but it's worth noting that on this Saturday afternoon, Dr. Bob had gone to get a plant for his wife for Mother's Day, which was the next day. And he was passed out. Now, some people say it was in the living room. Some people say it's in the foyer. I've been to Dr. Bob's house. The living room and the foyer are pretty close together. And he was passed out with the plant. The potted plant, Dr. Bob was potted. So she had Bill, actually, Bill came over to her house and he made dinner for her, for him. And they visited. And then she asked him if he could stay sober and that Dr. Bob would meet him the next day. Now, Dr. Bob hadn't agreed to that yet, but his wife and Henry Seiberling thought they had a plan for Dr. Bob. So it says Dr. Bob was formerly able and respected. He was a physician. Now, Bill W., I like to call him a shyster lawyer stockbroker. He was a fast-talking salesman. And Dr. Bob was a rear-end doctor. So think about it. He was a proctologist. He worked on people's rear ends. And of course, it's serious business if your rear ends are the problem. And he was a very good doctor, well-trained. But that's who God picked. God picks people today. He picked them. And it says, I like this, the nadir of alcoholic despair. So I said, what does the nadir of alcoholic despair look like? Isn't that a good question? Well, it actually describes it, because this is how the book's written. They'll tell you something, and then they give you the solution, and they describe it. It says, he had the usual situation, home in jeopardy. Anybody relate to that? Yeah. Wife ill, not physically, but mentally. Children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damaged. So here's where Dr. Bob was. Now, he had this feeling. Now, listen to this. He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out. Remember, they were going to call the big book The Way Out. He had no way out. He believed in God. He prayed. He read the Bible. It doesn't mean that that didn't work for him. But he was blocked from receiving God's power because he thought he was a sinner. He was a weak-willed person. And he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. He was painfully aware of being somehow abnormal. He knew he was abnormal. But man did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic. So here's Dr. Bob. I want you to listen to this. The nadir of alcoholic despair. His life is a mess. Everything's falling apart for him. He wakes up and his wife says to him, I have somebody who wants to talk to you who may have something to do to help you with your alcohol problem. All right? So Dr. Bob, now this is what a real alcoholic is. He says to his wife, I'll give him 10 minutes. Think about it. Somebody's willing to help him. He's dying. He's in complete despair. He says, okay, I'll go, but I'm only going to give him 10 to 15 minutes. That's enough. And the kids went with him. They sat in the back seat of the car. They went with him and his wife. And you can read the details from his children. They wrote diaries and kept diaries, and it's powerful stuff. So he went to this meeting with Bill. He had what we would call a piss poor attitude, right? He was sent here by the courts, and then he says, "I'll go to AA, but I really don't want to be there." And everything's falling apart. We fight it, don't we? That's why alcoholics die, because we don't give up. We don't completely surrender. So then he goes. And it says he did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic. realize means to, it appears that he could see the truth. So you might ask yourself, what does it mean to be an alcoholic? What does it mean to you to be an alcoholic? When did you realize you're an alcoholic? We're going to talk about it in a little bit. It says, when our friend Bill W. related his experience. Now, this is why Bill didn't have anybody get sober, because Bill talked down to them and didn't talk about his experience. He talked about the solution. And alcoholics don't want to hear, be preached at, or hear the solution. They want to hear someone else's experience. It says on page, I believe it's 20, that we have the power to do something that nobody else can. Page 18. It's in italics, squiggly writing. It says, the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. And this is what happened. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And that's the power we all have here to help another alcoholic. So we'll go back to page 155. So Bill talked to him about his experience. And what did he say? He had no willpower. Willpower wouldn't work. He had lost the power of choice to drink. His mind couldn't tell him the truth about alcohol before he took the first drink. And once he took the first drink, bad things happened. But bad things would never happen if you never took the first drink. So the problem centered in Bill's mind, and he had no power to keep from drinking except through his relationship with God. Now, this is what made a big difference to Dr. Bob. He says, the spiritual experience he conceded was absolutely necessary. So Bill W. conceded that Dr. Bob conceded was necessary. But here's the problem with Dr. Bob. He believed in God. He studied scripture. He was a good man. But he thought he was weak-willed and a sinner. And he thought, and when you think you're a sinner and you think you're weak-willed, you don't think you're worthy of God's power. So he could have prayed to God, but he didn't believe he was worthy of it. He had no relationship with God because he thought he should have been able to fix this thing. Once he understood that he had no power to do this and that it wasn't, he had no power to do any differently, then he could free his idea to the mind that God could do this. And he didn't see himself as separated from God anymore. He saw himself as separated from God before he met Bill W. Does this make sense? And he was separated by his behavior and his action. He wasn't worthy of God. Now, AA has a different view of God, that God's unconditional love, and he's there for us, and he forgives us. And all we have to do is seek him. So he conceded that a spiritual experience was necessary, but the price seemed high to do this upon the basis suggested. And here was the price that was too high for him. He was a physician. He thought nobody knew about his alcoholism, which of course is a complete mirage. Mm-hmm. He told how he lived in constant worry. Now, worry is a nice name for fear. He was in constant fear. Now, if you're living in constant fear and you're an alcoholic, is God able to direct your thinking? No. What directs your thinking? Fear. Remember, we look in step 4 at the things that are blocking me from God's power. Fear, resentment, shameful conduct. So he had all three. And he was in constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. Why? Because he still had his pride and his self-esteem, and he wanted approval, and it was important to him what people thought of him. He had, of course, the familiar alcoholic obsession that few knew of his drinking. Anybody have that? Why, he argued, should he lose this fear, the remainder of his business, only to bring still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense when you read it, but it doesn't really make sense in light of the situation. He needed to make amends. He needed to go out and do steps 8 and 9. And he had blocked himself from the world. Now, remember, if you're blocked from other people, you're blocked from God. Being blocked from God is not a good situation for an alcoholic. So if there's any person that you're angry at, any person you're not willing to forgive, any person you're not willing to make amends to, that'll block you from God. And when you're blocked from God, you have no power not to drink. He would do anything, he said, but that. So he's willing to do a lot of things, but he's not willing to go to any length, right? He had conditions on what he would do to get sober. So let's see how that worked for him. Being intrigued, however, he invited Bill W. to his house. So Bill W. got out of the hotel, lived with Dr. Bob. They lived 2 weeks together. They tried to work these spiritual steps. They read the Bible every day. They prayed. They meditated. Dr. Bob was doing the deal. Sometime later, just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, now I don't know if they wrote the words intentionally, but notice Dr. Bob thought he was getting control of his situation. He's getting knowledge. He's getting control of it in his mind. Do we ever get control of it in our mind? No. No, we can't see the truth, only with God. He went on a roaring bender, and what happened was he went to the AMA convention. He was 2 weeks sober with Dr. Bill. And his Ann Smith said to Bill W., don't let him go. He gets drunk every time. And she said, well, we can't live him. He can't live in a cell. He's got to be around the world and be able to live with other people. And so he went, and it's a long story, but he took the train. They didn't fly in those days. He found one of his nurses picked him up. He was a complete mess. It took a couple days to sober him up. And then it was a spree to end all spree. He saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. Now look at that line. What a powerful line. He has to face his problems squarely, and then God gives him mastery. Now, somebody was talking about, I don't know about you, but when I came in here, I was a problem solver. Anybody else a problem solver? So I'm going to come in here and get all this knowledge. They're going to come here, listen to me, and get the knowledge of how to fix God. Well, that doesn't happen. What they get from me is how we have to give up everything we think I know so God can come into our lives. And that God might give a mystery. Now, the spiritual world and problem solving is different than the material world. In the spiritual world, problems are not solved, they're removed from us. And who removes them? God. And it says, take away my difficulties, the victory over them may bear witness to those I might serve of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. God solves the problem. It says that very clearly on page 45, where it tells us that we're going to die. And it says, page 45, on the first paragraph, right above it, it says, my human resources were not sufficient. They're not going to be able to keep me from drinking. It says, lack of power. That was our dilemma. I did not have any power to live. It says, I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be greater than me. Obviously. That's a powerful sentence, obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's why we study this book, because it says that's what this book is about. This book is a roadmap, a treasure map to finding the power. And it says, the power greater than yourself. Now, I read this wrong. I thought I would find a power greater than myself, and I'll solve my problems. It doesn't say that. The power solves my problem. I need a power to live. I need a power from God. God solves the problems. So one morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared what his trouble had been. He made amends. Now what happened was, they took him to the hospital. He was very jittery. He had to work on somebody's rear end. Mm-hmm. Now there are people in AA who are AA historians who tried to find out the name of the rear end patient, like it would make a difference. But somebody gave their rear end for us. And he was shaky, so Bill gave him some beer, gave him a drink, so he would settle down so he could do the surgery. So he went in and did the surgery. And then AA folklore says he didn't come home for a while, and Bill and Ann worried about him, thought he was drunk. But he actually did tell them after the surgery that it went well. But then he didn't show up, and what he did was he went around and he told everybody about what was going on in his life.
I wanted to ask just a brief question. That when the point when it says he saw that he would have to face his problems where that God might give him mastery, would you say that's the point where he surrendered?
Yeah. Okay. He couldn't fix this. He had no power to fix this. And it's complete surrender. and we want a different way. And so he went around, he told, stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he hurt, so he's making his amends. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly to a person in his line of guilt. Now, Dr. Bob was blocked from God by shame and guilt. He had shame and guilt, and we talk about that in your eighth and ninth step. You know, don't keep the shame and guilt in your head. Give it to someone else. Let it out. Because the shame and guilt is only the way we see ourselves. God doesn't see us with shame and guilt. God loves us, but we see ourselves with shame and guilt, and then that blocks us from God. And so the way we get rid of shame and guilt in the steps is we make amends. We find all the people we've harmed, and we're willing to make amends, and then we do it if we can. So at midnight, he came home exhausted, but he was happy. Mm. And here's the line. He has not had a drink since. Mm. This was 1935. He died in 1951 of pancreatic cancer. And I think Dr. Bob was 50 when he sobered up. And as we shall see, he now means a great deal to his community, and the major liabilities of 30 years of drinking have been repaired in four. If any of you think you've had a bad situation, your life's a mess, try this. Now, we don't say that the circumstances will change, right, but the way you react to them will change, and actually your behavior will change, and the circumstances will probably get better. It says, well, life was not easy for the two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves. It says, it doesn't say we get sober and we get everything we want, right? We have difficulties, but they have a spiritual way to deal with them. And it says they saw that they must keep spiritually active. So here's Dr. Bob and Bill. Bob's been sober 5 days, and they're going to go and find another alcoholic. Think about it. Did they wait a year? Did they wait a month to do the steps? How desperate were they? And so think about that yourself. So I'm going to stop there, and then we're going to look at where AA came from and hopefully finish a vision for you. But, you know, I talk so much, who knows? So anyway, I hope you got a lot out of that. To me, it's so powerful. It's the whole deal, and it tells you all about the spiritual path that we're on. So we'll open it up for some